98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. Burns and Gambo starts now.
Straight up 2 o'clock on this Tuesday afternoon. Good afternoon and welcome into today's edition of the Burns and Gambo Show here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. We are live from the Auction Community Studios. My name is Dave Burns, alongside the one, the only, John Gambadoro. Hi, Gambo.
Burnsy, what's going on?
Turn on that microphone, Gambo.
It's on. It seems like it was on. Looks on to me. What? It's on. Jeff's got it. You got it, Jeff? Jeff's got it. Let me try it again. Burnsy, what's going on?
That's better. Sound a little quiet.
Yeah.
Happy picture day to everybody out there.
Oh, we have to do all our photos today.
Yeah, today was. Yeah. So every 5 years, we do like these fancy schmancy professional photographs, headshots, right? Show shots, whatever you want to call them, which I, for one, am grateful for. Because the last time we did headshots around here, I was a giant tub of goo. I'm just telling you right now.
No, you are.
I was a big fat tub of goo.
Yes.
And if you look at some of the pictures when you're watching the show on the stream, there we are at the Salt River Fields, and there's Gambo looking about the same as he does now. And I just look like a big old tub of goo in those pictures. So I'm very happy.
You're skinny.
I'm very happy that we're redoing the pictures, but I am not happy. There's two things I love about this job.
What?
Well, okay, number one, I get to watch sports for a living. And number two, if I want to come to work in a t-shirt and shorts, I can come to work in a t-shirt and
shorts. Every day that ends in Y.
Collared shirts, pants, dress shoes.
I will say that of all the people that took photos, they did say we were the best.
Well,
they've
only done two of the shows so far. So it's a pretty small pool that they're choosing.
We're the most fun.
I wonder if they go with the one that you like the best. The one where you're basically doing a big jumpy thing behind me.
Behind you?
Yeah, where you're like jumping behind me.
I jump behind you and I do like this, like, you know, arms up and then legs up and just try to get as much air as I can.
And probably tweet it out.
Every time Gambo's got his hands in the air, he just looks like the happiest man in the world.
He does, right? Seriously, try to get Gambo to take a picture where he's not holding his arms out wide, or he's not pointing to the camera, or he's not pointing with one hand and pointing back with another.
I'll give him this. He looks a lot better than most people do with their hands in photos. A lot better.
See? He's like doing the Heisman.
Hands up there. Pointing. Trying to have some fun.
So you'll
make
see
it
those,
loose.
You'll see those photos at some point in time. So happy picture day to everybody. Let's weigh in on our top story of the day here on the Burns and Gambo Show.
Burns and Gambo, the weigh-in, brought to you by Revitalize Weight Loss.
Can we wait? Do we have to pay for those photos? Like in school, like you get a package, you know, wallet size, 5x11 for grandma.
We can charge the listeners.
I mean, yeah, do it. Is that what you get?
You get the wallets, the 5x11.
Can you get one on a coffee cup?
The package where you get the 8x10, the 2 5x7s.
The wallets.
The 5 wallets.
The 5 wallets. Is that what we get?
I remember when you were a kid, you used to want your parents to get as many wallets as you could so you could like hand them out to all your friends and all the girls. Hey, you want to? Yeah, sure. We used to put them in your wallet and everything. Yeah.
I always thought that was weird that I, you know, when I first got a wallet, I had like pictures of all my friends in my wallet.
Yeah, that's what you do when you're a kid.
Right. Like,
I know. It's
I could still bring in today, like, photos I have of Bobby and Frankie and Joey and Rocco that I still have in my memory box. Like, why was I walking around with photos of a bunch of guys?
It's just what you did.
And now I just have too many credit cards. Ugh.
Yeah, I know, right? I'd rather have pictures of my friends than all the credit cards I have in my wallet. There's no doubt about that. We don't have to pay for the pictures today. At least I hope we don't. We weigh in today with what will be the first, I'm sure, mini of look-aheads to opponent number two for the Arizona Cardinals. Before we look too far ahead, we look back at the Minnesota Vikings, who, like everybody else in the NFC North, lost this past weekend. They lost in overtime to the Cincinnati Bengals.
How?
And they did a lot of things. If you're a Cardinals fan, a lot of things that are going to encourage you about that game. Their secondary was in shambles, though not necessarily Patrick Peterson. Their offensive line, especially the interior, was god-awful against the Cincinnati Bengals. And
they're not a good football
team. They don't look like a very good football team.
No, I think they're a very average football team. And that was, you know, you saw that, you know, kind of stunned that they lost that game. I mean, it's the Bengals. Like, we're not expecting the Bengals to be any good. So, you know, you like this opponent. You see the early predictions that are coming in. And, you know, people like the Cardinals in this game. And This is not a trap game, I don't think. But you don't want to get too high. You know, you look at, I hate power rankings, but you look at the Dolphins are falling. They fall four spots. They fall seven spots. They fall three spots. Pete Prisco's got him down 10 spots. Yahoo's got him down eight spots. And, you know, I think people are just really disappointed. And I've even read comments, boy, are they starting to, you know, tune out Mike Zimmer?
Yeah.
I mean, they had a dozen penalties. And their best player fumbles the ball in overtime. He doesn't play very well. And Dalvin Cook. And, you know, all of a sudden, you know, you're looking at this game. You're like, boy, could the Cardinals start 2-0?
I think you're looking at this game and thinking if the Cardinals could start 2-0, I was looking at this game all along thinking, honestly, they were going to lose to the Colts and that they'd be 2-1 after the first three games because they had the Vikings, then you had the Jacksonville Jaguars. Now you're looking at how bad the Minnesota Vikings were, and you are definitely thinking 2-0 because it's your home opener. That crowd is going to be, there were no full crowds a year ago, so Minnesota's going to be stepping into a little bit of a pit when it comes to that on Sunday afternoon, dealing with the Red Sea being, you know, loud and full and all of that. Patrick Peterson's return, that's going to be a big deal that I'm sure we're going to make much more of as the week goes on. What I thought was interesting was I read this thing from Mike Sando on The Athletic about how Mike Zimmer, the head coach of the Vikings, has this tendency to blame others for what's going on with the Vikings. How he's one of those coaches who will very often say, we coach them the right way. They didn't do it the way they were coached. You know, and you wonder how much longer an act like that can go on before it starts to wear thin.
That's Steve Wilks.
I know, right? Remember when he used to do that?
That's Steve Wilks.
The first half of Steve Wilks' one and only season with the Cardinals. Man, we were coaching him upright. They just weren't doing it the way we were coaching it. And you could tell.
And I remember saying, like that's a recipe for disaster,
uh-huh.
Man. You start blaming the players? No, we had the right game plan. They didn't execute the game plan that we gave them. They just didn't execute. We told them what to do, and they didn't do it. And after a while, I was like, hey, man, that's a recipe for disaster. You're going to get fired. You keep that up.
Yep.
And then he changed it, but it was too late.
Uh-huh. Somebody got to him.
Four games left in the season. Do you remember Steve Wilks was all about the blame game?
Oh, yeah. Oh, I do. I do. Before the Vikings lost in Cincinnati on Sunday, Zimmer dismissed fans concerned about his team's defense, suggesting in remarks to the Minneapolis Star Tribune, quote, if you polled all the offensive coaches in the league, they would still say that I'm ahead of the curve. Zimmer also suggested the Vikings nearly pulled off one of the best coaching jobs there was by winning seven games last season with the group that we've got.
Man.
That's you hear that, you go, I've always been a fan of Mike Zimmer.
I'm the greatest coach in the NFL.
Right.
If you don't believe it, ask Jeff Fisher, he'll tell you. it's like Jeff Fisher, right? I'm not going 7-9. I'm too good. I'm too good of a coach. Look, all coaches have egos. They all think they do a great job. But when you start to get challenged, I mean, he's fighting back. Like, he's fighting back. He's like, you really don't think I'm a good coach? I won seven games with this hunk of garbage last year. Do you see who my quarterback is? Kirk Cousins. Like, that's my quarterback. Like, you know, how far do you think I'm going to go with Kirk Cousins? It's almost like that. Now, you do have Dalvin Cook, Adam Thielen, and Justin Jefferson. The Cardinals just went up against Derrick Henry, A.J. Brown, or Julio Jones. They come back with Dalvin Cook, Adam Thielen, Justin Jefferson. Thielen had 9 catches for 92 yards and 2 touchdowns last week.
Mm-hmm.
Jefferson had 5 catches for 71 yards and a touchdown. So, actually, it wasn't a touchdown. It was called a touchdown, but I don't think it was. But anyway, those two guys played well. Like, they played well. So they got the ball to those guys. Now, Dalvin Cook did not play well. You know, he struggled. He had 20 carries for 61 yards. He had a touchdown. He had a fumble. He did have 6 catches, so they throw the ball to him quite a bit. So they've got 3 weapons, kind of like Tennessee did. Now the Cardinals are going to go into this game, and they say, okay, we just shut down Tennessee's top three. Let's do it again.
Yeah.
Let's shut down the Vikings.
In some ways, I feel like the most dangerous opponent for the Cardinals this weekend is actually the Cardinals themselves, just in battling a little of that overconfidence that might come.
Now you sound like Herm Edwards.
The
Sun Devils playing the Sun Devils.
The
Sun Devils playing the Sun Devils.
The greatest thing we have to fear is fear itself. But you know what I mean, in that they've got to be a really confident bunch right now. They just went on the road and floored the Tennessee Titans, a playoff team from a year ago, just absolutely humiliated them. you know, you got to battle against overconfidence a little bit. You got to especially when looking at Minnesota, at a team that was down 2 touchdowns to the Cincinnati Bengals before rallying and then losing in overtime. All of their penalties, all of their offensive line issues, all of their secondary issues. You got to be careful looking at a team like that, not getting too overconfident, because it feels like a very winnable game for the Cards at
home. The main theme that came out of the Vikings losing was how bad their offensive line was. That was the main thing. Their center, who's in his third year, Garrett Bradbury, he got bullied all game. Their guards, Urza Cleveland and Oli Uda, they struggled. Really struggled in that game. So there was a lot of struggles with the offensive line that they're talking about in Minnesota, just how poorly that offensive line played. And now you got Chandler Jones, and you know, I'm sure J.J. Watt's licking his chops, and you got a front seven that just dominated the Tennessee Titans, and they're looking at the same thing. You know, they're looking at the same thing. Like, you know, they had him in third and long all day long. Minnesota was in third and long all day.
Yeah.
All day long, third and long, third and long, third and long. If you're the Cardinals, yeah, you're Vance Joseph. You know, you're saying, you're looking at it, I want similar results to what happened with the Bengals.
Text the word Red Sea right now to 620-620. And then listening for your name today at 3:35 in the afternoon, you could win a pair of tickets to the Arizona Cardinals home opener this Sunday. We've also got a grand prize winner who's going to score an autographed Kyler Murray jersey courtesy of Pristine Auction. Again, text the word Red Sea to 620-620. It's a good thing the Cardinals did win yesterday, because the rest of the division won to keep pace. Chase Edmonds, though, a member of that offense, looking around and wondering how much better they can be. We'll talk about that next on the Burns and Gambo Show. John Gambadoro, Dave Burns, we are the Burns and Gambo Show. Troy Lovello, manager of the Diamondbacks, scheduled to join us in about 15 minutes. The Arizona Cardinals will be back on the practice field tomorrow. And, you know, we talked a little bit yesterday when we were talking about the season-opening win against the Tennessee Titans, Gambo, about guys who are going into contract years who had big games yesterday, or on Sunday, I should say. Obviously, Chandler Jones comes to mind the most. He had 5 sacks and 2 forced fumbles. Then you think about Christian Kirk, who caught every single pass that he was targeted with, and he had 2 touchdowns as well. And there's Chase Edmonds. And it's strange to group Chase Edmonds into that club, but he is. He's going into a contract year. And if memory serves, he averaged about 5.3 yards per carry on Sunday for the Cardinals on 16 carries or so.
Going into that game, the only 2 running backs in the NFL to have at least 5 rushing touchdowns or 20 yards or more were Derrick Henry and Chase Edmonds. You know, Henry had 7 touchdown runs of 20 or more, and Chase Edmonds had 5. So he's one of those guys that could break those big runs. I like Chase. I think he's going to be a real good back. I think he's, you know, he's just coming into his own. He's getting the opportunity now. Remember, he was behind guys. I mean, you know, when he got here, you had David Johnson and Kenyon Drake, you know, for a year and a half with Kenyon. And now it's his. I mean, he's been biding his time, is waiting for his opportunity, and now he's got the chance to be the number one running back here.
I'm going to admit something here. I probably should admit this because it's going to make it sound like I wasn't paying that much attention. He had 12 carries for 63 yards.
Yeah.
Chase Edmonds did. I didn't realize he was that. At
over
least
5 yards a carry.
I didn't realize he was that prolific runner. There were so many other things to notice about Sunday's game. Kyler and Hop. And Chandler Jones.
Kirk.
And Rondale Moore. I mean, there was. Think about all the conversations we had yesterday. Basically, the whole show we spent talking about that game. We barely mentioned Chase Edmonds. Barely. And the fact that he was over 5 yards per carry, I had to look at it just to make sure. I said it. I'm like, did that actually happen?
Yeah, it did.
I just don't remember it that much.
There were no touchdown runs by him, and there were no, you know, big 50, 60-yard, you know, the running game just did what they needed to do.
Right.
You know, they just did their job. It's kind of like an offensive lineman almost. They just did your job, and you kind of go unnoticed. The stars were Kyler and Christian and D-Hop. Those were your stars. And Rondale Moore.
Yep.
The stars weren't the running backs. The running backs just quietly just did their job.
And even defensively, you know, with Chandler and Isaiah Simmons and Byron Murphy. I mean, there were so many standout game ball type performers. Not that Chase should have gotten a game ball for 63 yards on 12 carries, but I didn't notice his work as much as I noticed everybody else's, because everybody else's stood out so much. Chase Edmonds spoke to the media today. He talked about week one not being a signature win, but rather a starting point for the team.
Yeah, that's good for me, man. I think the one thing, the one message we're really trying to start in this building right now is that it was just 1 week, just a starting point, kind of just like Cliff said. You know, last year we got off to a decent start. We were, I think, 2-0, and then we blew 1 week three. So, again, we're just trying to take this 1 week at a time, one game at a time, figure out our next opponent, figure out how we can beat the Minnesota Vikings and keep moving forward.
And something I know you liked very much, and so did I, fourth quarter of that game, they've got the lead, they turn to their four-minute offense, they pound the rock, they run it, and I think they had 12 or 13 runs in the fourth quarter alone, and Chase spoke about the importance of the run game when they had the lead.
Oh, for sure, yeah. And that's something that me and James talked about literally on the sideline. I think it was right after we scored that, we hit 31, I believe. I was talking to him. I said, man, this is our time. You know, we got to really grind these guys out. We got to get some first downs and just continue to tire them out, lean on these boys, and take it home. And that's something that me and James take pride of, man. Me and him play with a huge chip on our shoulder. We kind of know what the outside world and the media is saying with us and everything like that. Just continue to just lean on one another and continue to go out there and grind, man. That's all it's about, finding ways to just figure out to have one more point than the other opponent. Obviously, you know, you keep going down the season and games get longer, and, you know, you go into December, November, January. The teams that can run the football and really have stout defense and hold teams in the second half, those are the ones you see in the playoffs. So, obviously, again, it's something for us to just build on every single week, week in and week out in the run game.
You know, in boxing, we'd love to go to the head, but your trainers always want you to go to the body. Go to the body, go to the body, go to the body, go to the body. What he's talking about right there, when they got to 31, it was body shot, body shot, body shot, head shot, knockout. And let me explain what I mean by this. So you get the sack by Chandler Jones. The fumble gets recovered by Golden. And this is exactly the point he was talking about. Mm-hmm. This is when they were at 31. First play, 16-yard run by Chase. Second play, 4-yard run by Connor. Third play, 2-yard run by Connor. Wear him out. Boom, boom, boom. Three shots to the body. And you know what happens? The gloves drop. And then they go to the air, and they get Kirk on a touchdown pass, and they go up 38-13. So that's what I, you know, to me, that's what he's sitting at. I mean, boom, 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 right to the body. You get the hands low, and you go up top. You get the touchdown, and you make it 38-13.
That was the 12-play, 75-yard drive, if I remember right. I think that was the one where they just kind of methodically, no?
No, not that one, because that one was they had taken over at the 33 of Tennessee. So Chandler Jones gets the fumble, gets recovered by Marcus. They're at the 33-yard line, and then it was just, you know, a few plays later and they scored to go up 38-13.
Okay.
The drive you're talking about?
I thought that was the one that made it 38-13, was the 12-play 75-yard. I could be wrong. I might be remember it wrong. It doesn't matter, because I understand what it was that you were trying to say. As far as Kyler... he said, "Yeah, I got to admit, we rewatch some of the plays that he makes, and we kind of lose our minds about it too."
I think if you're on the sideline, you do, but when you're on the field, when it's happening, it's kind of just, you know, you're so focused on trying to make a play and everything like that. It's happening so fast, you don't really get to see it. But you know, seeing from the sideline, like a play he made when he threw that touchdown pass to Kirk, how he kind of took a he took like an old school 3-step drop. Y'all remember how like Joe Montana and them old quarterbacks kind of just backpedaled straight up? And then, like, just threw it off two of his feet. And, I mean, that ball was just floating in there, and it was such a beautiful ball. And you see that from the sideline view. Obviously, you can react. But on the field, I'm sure I'd have just seen it like it was another regular throw. But seeing that ball from the sideline that he threw to Kirk, man, was a beautiful play. And, obviously, I told you guys from training camp, he keeps surprising us every single day, every single week. He's getting so good, man. And, obviously, a good thing for him is just keep his head down and keep working. You know, obviously, sky's the limit for K1.
You're right. That 12-play drive was the one that made it 24-6 right before halftime. Yeah,
that was the 75-yard drive.
Yeah.
Yeah, the 38-13. Because Chase was talking about when it was 31, we talked about how we got to – that's what they did. They got the ball. Run. 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 And all of a sudden, here comes Tennessee thinking you got to run the ball. Touchdown to Kirk. And it was just like buried.
Yeah.
That was the final nail in the coffin right there for the Tennessee Titans.
Certainly a good start for Chase Edmonds, 5.3 yards per pop in a contract year. I know it's the running back position. And
he's
that is
the guy in a contract year.
Huh? I know. Man. I know. But he's in a tricky spot because of the position he plays. You know, that makes it a little trickier for him. When we come back on the Burns and Gambo show, lots of young guys in the lineup for the Diamondbacks. Lots of young guys in the lineup every night for the Arizona Diamondbacks. We'll ask the manager, Troy Lovello, about it next on the Burns and Gambo show here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
Your exclusive home of the D-backs.
Diamondbacks.
98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. D-backs manager Torrey Lovello joins Burns and Gambo to talk D-backs baseball. Presented by PNC Bank. Financial tools and tech to help make things easier.
Every Tuesday at 2:30, we get to talk with the manager of the Diamondbacks. They're in Los Angeles today, taking on the Dodgers tonight. Game here right here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. With that, we go out to the Coulter Automotive Group Sports Line. Check in with Torrey Lovello, the manager of the D-backs. Torrey, what's up, man? How you doing?
I'm doing good, fellas. How are you?
Wait, how about that start for Seth Beer? I mean, the last of the four Astros guys that got a chance to get called up. He gets that home, that big home run, and you know, I'm excited to see him. He's definitely a big power bat.
I love you, Gambo. You go right into the feel-good parts of the story. I love it. I appreciate that, right? We know what we've been grinding through this year, and I'm sure we'll get to that later. But, he's come up, and he's had some really impressive at-bats, right? He hit a home run in his first at-bat. Great moment. But it was an at-bat that followed, you know, with men in scoring position. He stayed inside of a ball, and he shot a ball down the left field line. And as a left-handed batter, as a young left-handed batter, for you to have the knowledge as to when and how to do that and the trust to do it, that tells me that you worked really hard. So he's going to get a start today at first base. We're super excited about that. And we've got four players that are helping this ball club at the big league level from one trade. It's pretty remarkable.
Yeah. My scouting report on Beer that I got from the Astros, and I'm just going to tell me if you agree with this. He could really hit, but limited defensively. Funky swing, but will hit in the big leagues with some power. Great kid, easy to root for. Will have good personality with the Beer jerseys and stuff. Probably a first base DH only, but has played a little outfield. Little surprised he was traded because he's an AL style player. Power is good. That was my scouting report when from the Astros when the trade went down. You agree with those evaluations of him?
Yeah, you got to tell me who your sources are. That's pretty darn good. That's spot on. So, you know, every young player, right, they get traded over. There's excitement. They get in a new organization. They got to learn some new concepts. He's done that. There's certainly some growth and development in just about every area of his game. And then that's up to us to take that scouting report, which is pretty close. Take that scouting report and work on those limitations. We've been pounding away at that in the minor leagues. Player development knows what that blueprint looks like. They've been helping him get better day by day. And now he's going to get a chance to do it at the big league level. We're seeing some very early success, but we got to keep working and keep teaching here. It's not just because it's not the minor leagues doesn't mean we stop development here. We're going to still teach them just the same way.
I know it's probably early to ask this because I don't know how this is going to all end up, but there's some belief around the game that next year everything goes to a designated hitter, and it becomes when the new collective bargaining agreement is reached that'll be kind of bargained into all of that. Does Beer become, it's a funny way to phrase the question, does Beer become the guy that it becomes your leading candidate to be your DH if that's how baseball looks next year in the National League, Torrey?
I wish we were. I could answer that a totally different way if we weren't on the air right now, right? he will obviously deserve, he will get some strong consideration. I'm just speaking hypothetically, of course. I know the Major League Baseball is going to try and figure out a way to continue to progress this game moving forward. We're gonna adhere to the rules that they set forth. But if we go in that direction, of course, he's a big bat and he can thump the baseball. We know that. So we're not gonna end there with him. We want to make him a complete baseball player. We're in the National League. We got to do that. But he is that type of a bat, an impact bat. And you put a couple years on him of with 450, 500 big league at-bats, I think you're talking about a pretty special hitter.
Yeah. Troy Lovello, manager of the Diamondbacks, our guest here on the Burns and Gambo show. And you're right, Gambo started off with the good stuff. And I'm not going to try to hit you over the head with the bad stuff, but I'm kind of curious about Zach Gallen. And not that you're in the excuse-making business, but given that last year was what it was with the weird short season, has his development in any way as a big league pitcher at this level been stymied at all because of the unusual circumstances over the last calendar year or so?
Possibly. young pitcher, still developing, has a tremendous shortened season last year. And we came to see him as a potential, one or two guy. And I think the league felt that way about him. I would see opposing dugouts load up with other starting pitchers that would normally not be on the bench come and watch Zach Gallen perform. He was getting that type of respect throughout the league. Now it's just about continuing to grow. And maturity is part of, in this game, is saying, I'm good, I know I'm good, and I'm going to continue to be this good. That's something I think Zach is trying to get to. And he's still young. We have to be mindful of that. So he's tinkering, he's working, and he wants to get back to that level. We know what that end result looks like. But I think there are some mistakes that he's making inside of the game that are extremely identifiable. It's a lot of three-ball counts. It's having to throw balls in the middle of the zone. It's not landing some secondary stuff, not getting the consistent swing and miss. And giving up that big hit when he typically doesn't. The one thing that stood out to me about Zach when we first traded for him was he would get runners on and then get extremely stubborn and not allow that big hit or punch two guys out with the bases loaded to end the inning. He just can't get that big out and make that big pitch when he needs to. But we're going to keep pounding away at it. That's what we do here. And we know that he's an easy bet to get this thing turned around because we did see it happen so often last year.
You know, Skip, when I look at Dalton Varsho and I see, I don't know if I see Craig Biggio. I'm not sure what I see with him. I like him a lot. And he's really, in the last 60 days or so, I think we're getting a chance to see what he could do with consistent at-bats. And he could drive the ball, and he's got unbelievable speed. And he's probably not an everyday catcher. But as we've talked about in the past, there's no more Thurman Munson, Carlton Fisk, Johnny Bench. You don't have a guy catching 150 games anymore. So he can catch some, but where do you see him? I mean, do you talk about, is he more of an outfielder? Is he a catcher? Or is he a versatile player that you see playing multiple positions throughout the course of a season?
Yeah, I think I see him in that category. I mean, I'll just share what my personal thoughts are on him. I think he's got the capabilities of doing some very special things, whether he's behind the plate or in the outfield. But we got Carson Kelly here, who's a really good catcher, and he's developing as well. And he's going to be one of the best in the league. So, we feel like we've got two guys for that one spot. And the game has changed. You're right, Gambo, where you don't have that. Your starting catcher catching 155 of them. You've got the breakdown is probably 110 and 50. So what that means, obviously Carson will get the 110. Dalton, as we project right now, if things don't change, could get the other 50. But it's the other 112 games that I would like to figure out what to do with Dalton and put him on the field because he is very dynamic. And that player comparison to Craig Biggio is real. Both very dynamic athletes, handle the barrel, can hit for power, can take the game over on the bases, defensively an asset. So I don't want to take that away from Dalton, but we want to develop him as a catcher. We're still doing that. We feel like we have a pretty solid baseball player who's going to help us win some baseball games down the road.
All right, two starts for Luke Weaver since he's come back. He's getting the ball again tonight against the LA Dodgers. From your perspective, what have you seen out of him so far in his return back after all that time off?
A lot of intensity and the ability to make a pitch when he has to. He'll make a pitch that's not a fastball in the zone to get back into count. He's got a four-up fastball, a four-seam fastball that rises at the top of the zone. He can drive that thing down on both sides of the plate. That's a weapon in itself. But if you mix in some secondary stuff, front to back and side to side, he becomes pretty darn good. He's locked in right now. He's been throwing the ball real well. We need that to continue. This is a good baseball team that we're playing. They're driving to do something in this division to get to a playoff. We wanted to be as disruptive as possible, so Luke will be ready for that challenge today.
Skip, I think Bobby Knight said it about Purdue. He just got sick and tired of losing to Purdue. I'm sick and tired of losing to the Dodgers.
I agree. The first couple of years, right, 17, 18, and parts of 19, I thought we handled them really well. But the past couple of years have been unacceptable. And if you look at our entire division, Gambo, Our division this year has really done a number on us. We got to start right there, and I promise you it's going to get better.
Yeah. Skip, good stuff. We appreciate it. Good luck tonight, truly, and we'll talk to you next week, okay?
Okay, boys. Talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Skip.
Troy Lovello joining us on the Coulter Automotive Group Sports Line. Coulter Infinity, luxury cars, legendary service. Visit CoulterInfinity.com. As always, you can text us your thoughts. whatever it is that we're talking about on the air. The FanDuel text line wide open and available to you. Text us at 620-620 right now. And as always, we'll read the best ones on the air when we come back on the Burns and Gambo show. After another bad week for the Pac-12 in week one, they followed it up in week two despite another signature win. Just how signature was that win, and will it lift the conference to places it can go? That's next on the Burns and Gambo show.
The Burns and Gambo Need to Know Twitter poll, presented by Sanderson Ford.
Let's turn it over to Mitch. He's got today's Twitter poll question of the day here on the Burns and Gambo show. Hello.
Hi, Burnsy.
What's up?
The sky, for the most part.
You didn't say hi to Gambo.
Hi, Gambo. How are you doing?
Good.
That's good.
Yeah, I'm good.
This is a weird day just with Jordan not being here. I'm not used to being in the control room as opposed to the wedge today.
Oh, it's like an offensive coordinator going from the field up to the booth. Yeah, now you're up in the booth.
It's a weird
Bill O'Brien,
if you will.
It's good, Gambo. That's clever. Yeah. I like that. Mitch has gone from the field to the booth so we can get that bird's eye view of how this show is run. So, okay, what's it look like from 30,000 feet? What's our poll question
today?
Yeah,
coming in from way above to down below, the question today is, how will you react when Patrick Peterson, now a member of the Minnesota Vikings, makes his return to State Farm Stadium this Sunday?
I'd boo him.
Well, good, because that's one of the options.
I'd boo him.
There's two others. You'll cheer for him, or you are indifferent to his return.
He makes it impossible to be indifferent. Like, he does. He makes it hard to be indifferent. Because he's a blabbermouth. He's a blabber. I can't believe anybody would vote indifferent.
But based off of that, you can't believe anybody would cheer for him either. I mean, based off of what you just said, you basically are saying anybody who says they're indifferent or cheers for him, you do not understand those people.
Yes, but you may say, listen, the guy's a jerk, but man, he was a great Cardinal. I'm going to cheer for him. I'm going to respect what he did when he was here.
But why can't I be indifferent by saying, the guy's a jerk?
Because you're not allowed. You shouldn't be allowed.
Okay,
should not be allowed to be indifferent. You should have an opinion one way or another about Patrick
Peterson.
But
that's the thing. I don't want to cheer him because he's been a blabbermouth ever since he left. But I don't want to boo him because he's a great Cardinal, and his name's going to go up there in that ring of honor one of these
days. Oh, my God. Will you just pick one?
I'm indifferent.
Oh, my God.
I'm indifferent.
Oh, my God.
I'll tell you what. I'm working on cutting the rest of this recent All Things Covered podcast now, but Patrick Peterson shared how he's going to feel.
You know, Mac, I really don't know, but honestly, at this moment and at this time,
it's
a regular game.
It's just a regular game, is what he said.
That it's just a regular game.
You've got to have an opinion.
To be fair to me, Gambo, I'm always indifferent when these players come back.
I guess I'm
not a booer. I'm not a cheerer. It's okay. Hey, you're back. Cool. Whatever.
Life goes on. See what happens when Dario gets traded in and he comes back.
What are our results so far?
Burnsy's going to be crying when that day comes. Yeah, all right. Yeah. Well, they're with you today, Burnsy.
Indifferent
to his return leads 51.6%. But Gambo, you're halfway behind on booing, 28.6%. I'll cheer him in the minority, 19.8%.
It's more than I thought for the cheering, to be honest with you.
How could 50% of the people... I'm indifferent. I don't care. Like, the guy's been yapping ever since he left.
But I've got respect for him for what he did when he was here, so it balances out. It balances out.
How about you boo him in the first half and cheer him in the second then? My God.
That's pretty good balance right there.
Well, plus I'll be in the press box on Sunday.
Can you do it at the same time?
And no cheering is allowed,
I mean, can you?
No, you can't really do that. That's the poll question. You can find it on the Burns and Gambo Twitter page, at Burns and Gambo. One word is where you can find that. All right, so turning our attention to college football, and we'll talk about the Clay Helton situation coming up in a little bit in the show. But ASU football, 2-0, ranked 19th in the country, and coming off a win that probably wasn't as comfortable as it should have been to some with how they handled UNLV over the weekend. Now get BYU coming up on Saturday one of the few matchups this weekend of ranked versus ranked teams.
So they may get beat the way BYU played against Utah last week. They're sky high, and Arizona State does not look good. That was as brutal of a first half as I've seen by ASU. UNLV is garbage, by the way. They're garbage. Like, they lost to an FCS team in Ewash last week. They've made the playoffs like once in the last 20 years. They've had a winning season. Forget about playoffs. Once in the last 20 years, they had a winning season. I couldn't believe how bad Arizona State was to start. UNLV had a 16-play, 70-yard drive that led to a field goal. And then they had a 10-play, 75-yard drive that culminated in the quarterback, Brumfield, had a keeper, scored from 4 yards out. And all of a sudden, I mean, it's 14-10 in the first half. Like, what's going on here? And at ASU, they don't even want to try a 43-yard field goal with Zendejas. They go for it on 4th-and-3. Jaden Daniels gets sacked. They turn the ball over. They don't want to even take a field goal for 4. I almost couldn't believe what I was seeing. Now, second half, at the end of the third quarter,
kind of found themselves
Okay, yeah, yes. They got themselves. Defensively, they got the stops, right? They got the stops defensively. They scored. They got a stop defensively. They scored. The defense played really well. UNLV could not do anything at all. But, man, it was 14-10 with 45 seconds left in the third quarter when they scored. 14-10 in the final minute of the third quarter. They finally score to go up 21-10, and then eventually, you know, they get 16 more points after that. But, my God, I just almost couldn't believe what I was watching with ASU in that first half. It was discouraging.
Yeah, now they're going into a real tough situation in BYU. Their first true
I think they're gonna get beat.
Road game in 2 years. And Herbman pointed that out when he was on with Bickley and Murata yesterday and the reporters yesterday. Like, we haven't really a true road game in front of a bunch of bloodthirsty fans. We haven't really had that scenario in a couple of years, and how they respond to that in a building where it was literally Jordan Bird was talking about yesterday, our producer, about how you could see the camera shots shaking when BYU was playing Utah because of how loud and how raucous that crowd was.
And they stormed the field afterwards.
It's going to be, well, it's the in-state rivalry, BYU versus Utah. That's a big deal game right there. This is going to be a big deal game for ASU, especially given what else is going on around the conference. We'll talk about U of A in a second. For the second straight week in the Pac-12, embarrassing results for the conference except for one very high-profile win,
Oregon.
And that win by Oregon was about as high-profile as they get when they beat Ohio State on the road.
First of all, that's Ohio State was a two-touchdown favorite. Oregon had never beaten Ohio State. They were like 0-9 against them. There's over 100,000 in that building, and the Pac-12, they get the win. It's the Pac-12's first non-conference road win over a top-five team since 1990. I'm going to say that again. Pac-12's first non-conference road win over a top-five team since 1990. It's the Ducks' largest upset win since 97, when they won as a 21-point underdog at Washington. I mean, they entered the game 1-9 all-time when playing a ranked Big Ten team, and they were 0-4 on the road. C.J. Verdell was unbelievable. The one chance they had was that running game, because Ohio State cannot stop the run. They couldn't stop Minnesota. Minnesota ran all over them, and then Oregon ran all over them. I mean, they just... You know, and the Buckeyes, like, you can say, oh, they still control their own destiny. They don't look good. They don't look good. I mean, the Ducks had 269 yards on the ground. I mean, Ohio State could not stop Minnesota from running the ball. They couldn't stop Oregon from running the ball. I'm not a fan of C.J. Stroud, but he didn't play poorly. He had a good day, 3 touchdowns, 484 yards. And they moved the ball. I mean, they had like 600 yards of offense. But for Ohio State, they've got a major thorn in their side. They can't stop a running game.
Yeah, no. And then for the Pac-12, U of A lost at home to San Diego State. They're now changing quarterbacks again.
Washington looked terrible.
Washington looked terrible against Michigan. Cal lost to TCU. Utah, we mentioned, they dropped to BYU, USC. They lost to Stanford, fired their coach. Colorado versus Texas A&M, second straight week. Same results. Now, how this impacts ASU is interesting. Because one of the college football writers for USA Today, and I got this out of the Arizona Republic today, did his bowl projections. Because of Oregon's win, he's got Oregon in the national Final Four. And because of that, he's got ASU in the Rose Bowl. Now, it's just a projection. It's just week two, and ASU's going to have to play a whole lot better than they did against UNLV to make that a reality.
Sign me up.
But he's got Oregon going to the national championship Final Four, the semifinals. And because of that, that leaves a void. And he's got ASU playing Ohio State in the Rose Bowl. Fans would take that in a New York minute.
Listen, this conference, they're 2-5 against the Power Five. They've lost twice to BYU, conference. They've lost twice to BYU. They've lost 3 times to the Mountain West.
Oregon's not getting out. They're not getting out. Now, maybe they can lose one game and still get in the Final Four. I'll accept that as a possibility.
You just need Oregon or UCLA, one of the two. Can one of the two go undefeated?
In this conference, given its history, I don't think so.
Okay.
I
don't know.
They cannibalize each other. They always do. Or remember, Oregon was the Pac-12's best shot a couple years ago. Who'd they lose to? Jaden Daniels and ASU. when Daniels was a freshman.
Two games left in the season, I think.
Yeah,
right?
I was right at the very end. It was their best shot to get a team in. This conference is brutal when it comes to stuff like that. We'll see. When we come back on the Burns and Gambo show, they went undefeated in week one by a wide margin. How do the players in the NFC West feel about their division? One very prominent member talked about it, and that's next on the Burns and Gambo show.